from Ottawa, Canada, all the way from Ottawa, Canada. I know that surprises you right off the bat. It doesn't sound like music that comes out of Ottawa, Canada. But that's the Soul Jazz Orchestra with Mojuba. It's from their 2007 album, which happens to be the second album that they put out, called Freedom No Go Die. Their distinctive sound, combining several different genres, serves as the platform for their political message music. As one music critic put it, think of James Brown meeting up with Tito Puente, and they all meet up at Fela Kuti's house for some jamming. And I'm delighted to have them on board. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And before I go a step further, I'll be announcing this throughout the course of the program. I just want to remind you about March the 11th, Sunday, March the 11th at 1:30 p.m. Yours truly will be in the house. What house? The Community Church of New York in Manhattan at 4040 East 35th Street. And that is just off of Park Avenue. And I'll be giving a little talk there. But most importantly, it would be great to see your sparkling faces and we could all have a group hug. Oh, Lord, we need it, don't we? We need it. So mark your calendars for Sunday, March 11th at 1:30 p.m. at the Community Church of New York. That's at 40 East 35th Street in Manhattan, just off of Park Avenue. I'm really looking forward to seeing you there. Well, what I want to talk about today, I felt it so sharply over the weekend. And in so many ways, we really need to stop and think about this. Having to do with what is the role of government and what are people owed by government? Today, students, faculty, and administrators of Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, are expected to put in a full day today. It's the first day since an ex-student with an array of discipline and mental health issues went on a killing spree at the school. And that was on Valentine's Day, killing 17, mostly students, and injuring dozens more with a military-style assault rifle. Politicians and officials were quick to offer up the customary phrase about "we're keeping them in our thoughts and prayers." I wish that phrase is never used again. In the immediate aftermath, lots of thoughts and prayers. Although the killer, the alleged killer, had been warned about, but nothing was done, even though a month had elapsed between a warning by someone we don't know about the likelihood that this was going to happen. But now everybody is expected to come back to school. It's the first day of school, and they're supposed to be bright and cheery and looking forward to picking up where they left off. And we wonder who is actually crazy here. These students are coming back to a school that was a killing field, many of them witnessed fellow students falling after being hit. They witnessed the violence and the gore. And, well, they got a couple of days off. That ought to do you. Get you back in gear for school. Meanwhile, there are no answers anywhere at any level to be found about how is this kind of violence, how is it to be abated, or how is it to disappear? How is it that this kind, this mass killing that we seem to have such a lust for, just mass killing, just go out there and kill, 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 kill. We have such a poor response to all of this that it's tantamount to no response at all. And I can't put it in my head how people, young people, in the prime of their lives and concerned about things that teenagers are concerned about when they are in high school, you know, apart from studying and everything, there's life to be lived. But on Valentine's Day, what they witnessed was a mass attack on their fellow students. And it could have been them. But at the end of it all, 17 lay dead. Dozens others are injured. And they had to leave with that memory, that vision in their heads. And go home or do something, taken somewhere where they could be distracted for a few days to collect themselves. And then they're brought back to the scene of the crime. And it's as if, well, we know it was you went through a bad time. But, you know, there is a future ahead of you, and let's get to it. Let's get that done. This is madness. This is absolute madness. No one has yet been able or brave enough to put forward a sensible response to what mass killing and school shootings, mass school shootings. What do you do with this? How do you treat a whole school, more than 3,000 students, who essentially experienced a cataclysmic event? And all the feelings associated with that. And then the adults have no answers. So on top of all of the things that they had experienced on that day and since, it is now falling to the students, or at least the students have picked up the mantle themselves. And this is so wrong. They are fighting for themselves. Their parents are not able to supply answers. The school bureaucracy doesn't have answers. The local mayor doesn't have answers. The local sheriff doesn't have answers. The governor doesn't have answers. Congress doesn't have answers. The president, though, has an answer, and that is give guns to teachers. Yes. And then, you know, before you know it, any killer coming into the school would be taken down. And that suffices as an intelligent and cogent response to something as grievous as this. And I'm so upset about what this system says about young people and its responsibility. They know everything about what people ought to do. But in this situation, there are no answers. There's a lot of finger pointing and blame, but no answers. And how could a society as a whole, how could a society permit this to happen? A blink of an eye ago, you had 17 dead students. Shot by somebody, many of them suspected, would do something like this. And in some instances, made it known because of concern. So there's no interference with that. They leave it to go just the way it went. 17 people dead. I can't imagine how I would deal with that. And how I would be expected to come back to the very scene of the crime and get back to my math or biology as if nothing ever happened. It didn't happen. I can't begin to think about how a person is induced into denial of such an enormous proportion. You saw them. You saw their bodies. You yourself had to run for your life. You had no idea if you were going to be among the dead yourself. And all hell is breaking loose. And the adults, the great leaders who are elected, have no way of giving and assuring safety in a situation like that. It is, we're doing the best we can. This is after several school shootings. They know the protocol to follow. You have to call the ambulances and you've got to call fire departments and so forth. That's not an answer. That's a response. Who bears responsibility for not following up on a warning that someone had lodged with the authorities that this young man, Nicholas Cruz, who used to be a student at the school, was contemplating doing something really awful, and he did. And 17 students are dead. And he is not one of them. I've been watching how the arguments are developing around this issue. And essentially, it all has to do with not putting the emphasis on safety and life for the students, but talking about Second Amendment rights and gun ownership. And the answer to a situation like this, we are being told as citizens of this country, the answer is more guns. Now let the teachers have guns. So on top of their pedagogical duties, they now have the additional duty of shooting to kill. And this is so crazy. But I marveled at the calm. I marveled at the seeming orderly discussions that were occurring in the media. I marveled at the fact that this president's stupid response, ignorant and stupid response, is give teachers guns, have them now trained to kill. As, you know, the mentality that has taken over this whole discussion is the right to have guns so you can kill other people who are planning to kill you. And that's the level of discussion that this nation is having. That's as far as they can go. That's as high as they can get in terms of intellectual analysis and response. Just give everybody guns. And it is happening because the National Rifle Association is in large measure in charge of the tone and direction of the conversation. A lobby group, a lobbying group has most authority, even more authority than the president and Congress combined, in shaping a discussion that instinctively, intuitively, we know ought to be had here. These are students. Are the schools now to be open grounds? Are we really to accept that nothing could be done except militarize the campus, militarize school operations and administrative operations, and pay no attention whatsoever to the damage they're causing to the psyches of these young people? Well, I could understand that because Trump's first wife, Ivana Trump, did say that he didn't even talk to his own children until they were college age. So he hasn't got the capacity for empathy about this at all. He should be out of this discussion. And then when he does open his pie hole, he says something stupid, so unforgivably stupid, that you wonder, I mean, what's next? What other atrocity can he actually commit here? In the face of a mass killing, your prescription for school children and school administrators, your prescription for safety is more guns. Ah, you just made the NRA really, really happy. They like that kind of talk. I had explained when this happened something about the Parkland community. And here is where we always have to, you know, we always have to connect dots. And we see how the adults here have totally abrogated their responsibility, including those who are elected to provide answers and leadership. they don't have it. They can't give it. They can't give what they don't have. In the end, the rest of us, we have to see how this society is going. If we look at the figurative deaths, the killings of futures of millions of school children in this country, nobody gives a damn. The shooting in Parkland, yes, was a physical act. But in every single Black Latino community in this country, the killing is psychological. The killing is by design. It's intentional violence being done to them. Students being forced to go to school in buildings that should make anybody ashamed. They don't have basics like drinking water, properly functioning bathrooms. Many don't have books. They're using outdated textbooks. And in some cases, they can't even get books that they're supposed to be using to teach the current curriculum. What is the curriculum? That's a whole different story. Teaching children to be alienated from themselves and their culture. The violence committed, like I said, about the so-called violence initiative. I talked about a story I wrote many years ago, about the schools coming up with this grand scheme to identify, of course, they have to be children of color, who in the minds of the people who make decisions may constitute that large pool of people who will become violent in their adulthood or early adulthood. And so it made sense to them to medicate them at the age of 5 and up. But starting at the age of 5 to administer chemicals to these children because they would have been diagnosed as, you know, having a propensity toward violence. It may not express itself now, but perhaps 10 years or 15 years from now, these would be the children committing crimes and acting violently in our society. And this pogrom not only received the blessings of people who supposedly have brains, it received the blessings of the system. So that is the kind of death that children of color are experiencing in unsafe schools, old schools, few relevant educational materials. And they're getting away with it. Why? Because the community has no energy at all to give toward the defense of their children. And so a menticide, the killing of their minds, has gone on unabated all these years. The concern, however, is when you talk to the union leader, Randy Weingarten, she's interested in teacher pay, teacher safety, retirements, and so forth. The last thing on anybody's mind is what is happening to the children in our schools. It is a massive crime. And then we come to the flip side of the coin, because in the United States, this is the schizophrenic life that we live, the bipolar life that we live. We're all experiencing death, but there's a way Black and Latino children experience it. There's a way white children experience it. Parkland was the, and is the outgrowth of restrictive covenants. Where citizens, developers in particular, buy huge tracts of land to attract a certain kind of people. And on the flip side of that coin, to exclude, deliberately exclude, certain kind of other people. The real estate industry, and I hope you remember me defining real estate as America's original swamp. They had systematically taken the land of the indigenous Floridians, bought up all the land that was sold cheap, because the intention was that Florida would become eventually what it was supposed to become during the years of slavery, an all-white bastion of supremacy. The real estate interest decided we need to attract the right kind of people here. They employed the salesmanship of people like Johnny Carson and, oh, what is his name? From the Honeymooners. Come down. They gave them lots of money to be ambassadors for this concept. That Florida, in Florida, as a white person from anywhere in America, you could come to Florida and live regally for a little money. And the developers saw to it that these pockets of apartheid literally suited not just the physical needs, but the psychological needs of the people they wanted to attract. You don't have to worry about seeing Black people living in your community ever. If you see them, it's because they're coming to work for you and they'll be gone by sundown. Florida was full of sundown towns. And the children, this was a strong selling point. The children will have, in accordance with the superiority of their parents, they will have a superior education. Black children had zero education that was meaningful. But the children of the people who came here as settlers, modern day settlers, were very pleased with these islands of privilege. They had their own schools, which were feeder schools into the well-known universities. They had their own police force. They had their own fire departments and hospitals and everything. They had all their needs met. And they had the ocean, and they had lakes, and they had a picturesque bucolic life. But mostly, their children, they could rest assured that their children will not be contaminated by that dreadful practice, especially in the North, of coeducational and interracial schools. Not that it actually happened a lot in New York City. New York City had its own educational apartheid. But that was the comfort zone that these parents and their children inhabited. Except the repeated denials flew in the face of a natural instinct. Children want to be with other children. And today, we see more and more evidence that the younger people have looked at the schizophrenic nature that their parents insisted that they should all live by. They reject that. They reject that. Life is about extending themselves and growing in a real world where real people have contact with real people. And there's a certain sense of injustice that they feel by the so-called privileged life that their parents and grandparents meant for them to have. They want contact. They do not want separatism. In the end, they created a world that also had the flip sides, the downsides of all the goodies that they intended to have and that children should have. They forced their false sense of racial superiority on their children. The sense that they can have whatever they want. They have all the toys and all the contraptions of a well-lived life. They don't have to bother where their next meal is coming from. That's not their world. In the black schools in Chicago and New York and Pennsylvania and Baltimore and Washington, D.C., that is daily life. So we have two worlds, two different worlds, except the world in Parkland for the young people now is one that they increasingly reject. They want no part of racism. Some may still, but for the most part, these young people have a vision of a different world. And they want to live as fully in it as possible. So we have a clash, but it still involves on both sides. It involves a killing. A killing has to occur. Massive killings are occurring in our educational systems every single day. For many black children, they have no future. They will have no future with the crappy education that they're given. Increasingly, the profit motive is what is important to the system about black and Latino children. You privatize the schools, you give them not public education, a sound public education. You give them charter schools with meaningless curricula and teachers who are not well trained. And they go to school in buildings that should be condemned because they're so unsafe. I wish, if you can do it, go online and look at what Detroit's schools looked like. I'm not talking about in the 16th century, in the 17th century, in the 18th century. I'm talking about now. Go see what the schools look like. That people are expected to send their children into those buildings, those buildings in which their deaths are going to be inevitable. They go in, and after 4 years, they're dead. They are unemployable, they're uneducated, and they are trained also to be contented with their lives because their lack of progress in the world is their fault. They're not smart enough, they're not bright enough, they're not applying themselves enough. Although we know that that menticide, that genocidal act by the system to create a permanent underclass, and now millions and millions of children all over this country are valuable, what? Commodities. So while their brains rot, we could make it pay. And tell people voucher systems are preferable. Tell them that the school system, they're altering it radically and giving them false hope that this system actually means their children any good. And then we see the flip side. The same kind of contempt is happening as well in white schools. So finally, blacks and whites have something in common through their children. Their children are suffering. And we need to recognize that. Because it could be, in my view, the single most powerful movement in this country if people decided to get serious about it. A child is the future. A child is the genetic marker that most people are looking at to point to and say, well, this son or this daughter of mine, it went way beyond anything I could have imagined for myself. But no, the United States is commodifying children. It hates children. It sees children only if there is a profit motive, if there's money to be made. But I go back to this is basic elemental stuff. Between the time these children in Parkland witnessed this horrific mass murder, and today, when they report to school for a full day's worth of education, the last thing that this system has thought about is that these children have suffered a traumatic experience, and we've got to help them. As an adult, I have witnessed violent things in my life that will never, ever leave my mind. That's how traumatic it has been. Imagine for these younger people, there's no strong effort to help them, to just help them. The president doesn't talk to them, he talks at them or through them, but he's not talking to them. The administration isn't talking to them. And you get a very clear sense that they're on their own. And in that regard, several of them have taken leadership positions and ought to be supported. But this is where I think we ought to come together around the future of children in this country. When a government behaves this disgracefully in such an extraordinarily awful circumstance, you don't have to ask, where the nation is going. The nation doesn't see itself as being responsible for the future of itself. Like I say, go back to Ivana Trump. Now, she, in her own words, said that Donald Trump had no dealings with their children until they were practically in college, of college age. What an indictment. This is the figurative father of the nation. He doesn't have it in him to be a father. He cannot envision himself actually comforting anybody because that does not exist in his soul. But yes, here's an opportunity to sell more guns. Yep, I could be a hero for the NRA. And give no answers whatsoever to our children who are looking toward these leaders for something called leadership. And I suspect that this is one pivotal moment. It's not just an incident. It's not just a tragedy. But it's a pivotal moment in which the people in this country should see how a government disregards its people. What exactly is government interested in? It's interested in the sale of guns. It's interested in keeping its ties to the NRA. It is so terrified of losing money support for the NRA, it will not dare, even verbally, take a position that this was a tragedy of ethical questions. And we really are genuinely concerned. If you're genuinely concerned about these certain children that have already assigned to grief counseling, and they would already have, and their parents, there would have been some kind of program to get everybody whole again, if it's at all possible, but make the effort. Make the effort. It's not time for platitudes. It's not time for talking all that trash that people typically talk about your thoughts and your prayers. First of all, you don't have any thoughts, Mr. President. He's incapable of thought. And we know he's not a praying man. That tells you the genuine effort that he is making as a leader of this country, to exercise insightful leadership here. The answer certainly cannot be that we not only make more guns, we sell more guns, and more devastatingly effective guns. These are guns now can obliterate people at rates we never imagined. So today, let's think about these children going back to school, and a part of them is dead. Let's think about the children in all of our schools for whom death, the deaths of their minds, the deaths of their futures, have been prescribed and being administered to them every single day. And we should not tolerate it. I have seen some schools, and the first question in my mind is, what the heck is going on with the parents? Have they ever come into the school and see that very few water fountains are working? Your child can't get a drink of water during the day. The schools are totally out of order. They are archaic and in fact pose themselves a hazard just by coming into school, a hazard. There was a school in Harlem, and I complained and complained about it for years, with no windows. How do you have a school with no windows? And parents are sending their children, because there seems to be no alternative, to a school with no windows. And you see the expression of contempt right there. Why does a child need to see the sunlight? We don't think of them that way. We think of them as future prisoners. So we're just getting them ready psychologically for the inevitable. A school with no windows. And the entire community was okay with that. They allowed it. They sent their children there every day. We are the fault because we don't take our children seriously. And that is the next generation of the damage done to us. We have been so badly damaged. We just don't see these things as important. We just don't see these things as worth a fight. Teachers having to spend money for pencils and basic supplies because their schools don't have any. And they're building down budgets for materials. Where is the money going? We're not asking the right questions. We're not involved in the right way. And in some cases, we're not involved at all. We just consign our children. We swear we love them. We consign our children to a system that has menticide on its mind. Let's just kill these people off. Kill off any possibility of a meaningful future. And we have got to wake up. We have got to wake up. The mass killings have already occurred and still are occurring in communities of color all over the country. Every single day, black children, brown children are being murdered every single day. The possibility of a bright future, forget it. Meaningful skills, forget it. Millions of children, when you think about it, over decades, have been murdered. And we have done nothing about it. Except, we complain. I'm saying, no, it's time for action. Way past time for action. If we value our children. And we no longer should look to them for answers. We must devise the answers ourselves, and we must insist that our children are worth fighting for, all of them, because they're all being taken advantage of. I'm sorry I went on this long, but I thought about it all weekend. What a crime it is of intentional neglect, of contempt, to have these children go back to the scene of a crime, and they are to pretend that nothing ever happened, and they just have to pick up from where they left off, and life goes on. Please don't think that way anymore, if you do. And think of ways in which we can intercede in behalf of our children and safeguard them in all these different ways, their health, their safety, their education, their future. That's our job as parents and as people of a community who see our future as being inextricably tied to these children and their proper care. Thanks so much for listening. I'll close and remind you again about March the 11th. And I really hope, more than anything else, I really would like us to just get together and say, hey, we've been connected for so long and we haven't been in one place at the same time. So let's accomplish that on March 11th at 1:30 at a Community Church of New York, 40 East 35th Street, just off of Park Avenue. And let's truly build community. And that's why I'm so pleased to be there at a church called Community Church, because I'm all about it. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned. Time is Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emmanuel. We'll see you tomorrow.